Welcome to the Mind and Fitness Podcast for Thursday, November the 16th. Now, normally I start with the theme song, but this is a special episode. And just coincidentally, so a listener of the show, Irina, who's also a patron of the show, her son made a theme song for me probably, gosh, I don't know if it was maybe a year ago, a year and a half ago, something like that. But she sent me a message last week, right after I recorded last week's show, to say that her son, Raph, who did the podcast, the last podcast theme, did an updated one for me. So that that is going to be the theme for today and moving forward. And it's awesome. So let's take a listen to this new theme song from Raph in Amsterdam. I like it. I like it. So what's interesting, the thing that jumps out at me is that, and I'll get to the patrons of the show in a second, but what jumps out at me is, I don't know if anybody recalls, but there was a time on this show where I would read iTunes or Apple Podcast reviews that people had to say, and just like any human being, I'd get, say, 50 positive reviews or 100 positive reviews, and then the one negative one that came out, that was the one that I would think about all the time. And there was one person that said that my theme song, my two theme songs ago, the very first one this show had, and it had it for the first probably 3 years that the show was around, 3 or 4 years the show was around, said that it was insensitive to the listener experience. It was something that was created for a YouTube show that I did in the mid-2000s by a guy named Dirty Menace, who was at the time a music composer and a rapper in Northern California, made this. It was a banger. Like, it was awesome. But some people felt that it didn't really fit what this show was about, which is a lot of human psychology and men talking about their emotions and things like that. And you could make the argument that a banger theme song with deep bass and riffs and all that stuff is maybe not conducive to the listener experience, whatever. But then Raph made me that awesome theme that I've been using up until this week. And now we have this evolution of this new one. And actually, I want to play it again because one thing that jumps out at me is that two songs ago or two themes ago was this loud, lots of beats, it was just hard hitting. Like, it was 30 seconds of just hard hitting. And then the first one that Raph did for me was less so. You know, he turned the volume down or turned the messaging down by 50%. And then this one is even calmer. This is the new one again. Okay, so here we are. Yeah, as I said, so November 16th, this is episode 300. This is a big deal. It's going to be a different kind of episode today, and I'll get into that in a second. But before we start, let me thank the patrons of the podcast. If you're interested in supporting the show, go to patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast. There's a litany of people, a collection of people that have volleyed forth anywhere from $5 to $8 to $25 per month. And some people even more over the years. There was a donor there for a while that was putting forth $50 every single month. And every little bit does truly help to keep the incentive going, keep the podcast on the air for free. This is something that's taken an enormous amount of time. If we just said that, each episode is approximately 45 to 50 minutes, so let's just round up to an hour. You take into account the editing time that's involved in that, over 300 times, 300 hours. And some of the earlier episodes, some of those interviews were going 90 minutes. And so probably somewhere around 500 to 600 hours invested into this show as a whole. That's a lot of time. That is a lot of time. So I want to make sure that I thank the patrons of the show. Again, patreon.com/ the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Mary and Teresa, Albert, Jeff, Julie, Deborah, Daniel, Emily, Elise, Dominic, John, Jason, Mindy, Irina, Kelly, Tony, Michael, Christina, who just sent me a message this morning, Julie, Brian, Sarah, Arnie, and Barb. Thank you all so much, wherever you are in this world, for continuing to support the podcast every single week and month. Truly grateful for you all. with enough frequency or with a good amount of frequency, I'll get a message from somebody that's fairly new to the show that will ask me, hey, is there one episode where maybe you've gone through everything, your story, from beginning to end? And I've done a couple of those, I don't know, one or two of those over the years. So, you know, give or take every 100 episodes or so, I'll do something like that. Because for one, it's a little boring. But for two, it took a very long time. And also, this is a continued evolution. So it's tough to say that there's a beginning and an end of the story because it just doesn't work that way. The human experience is something that continues all the time. So what I thought I would do for today is take you through. So there was a period of time, again, for me, when pain got so big that I couldn't ignore it anymore, began towards the end of 2015. There were little things along the way that I just managed, or I would avoid certain activities, or I would avoid certain foods or whatever, that probably began going back as far as 2013. And then you could look even before that, things like chronic nosebleeds and things of that nature that go back even further. But we'll say that the first symptom that I really remember happening on a very regular basis was probably about 2012, 2013 or so. And that was a allergy to dairy that showed up out of nowhere. I had had a ton of dairy. Dairy was a very regular part of my diet, but suddenly just made me feel incredibly sick, very sick. And I would go and get tested and it would show up as not positive. And I've had medical doctors on this show that have talked about the uselessness of food allergy testing and how there's lots of instances of false positives. And so that wouldn't have really told the story anyway, but got told there was no such thing as a lactose test. So that wasn't an option anyway. And it was interesting because when I went and did food allergy testing, oat came back as something positive, and I had oatmeal all the time, and I still do. I had oatmeal all the time then, and that turned me off of oatmeal, so I stopped having that. Again, I didn't have any symptoms, and yet I had this positive test. So dairy suddenly hit me in 2012 or 2013. I can't remember one of those years. And then also, once a quarter or so four times a year, I would start to get either knee, elbow, bicep, shoulder pain that would require going to see an orthopedist and sometimes required a cortisone shot, but all the time required some kind of a prescription to anti-inflammatories, so the heavy ones, in order to just continue to function and not hurt all the time. And I think a lot about walking from my office to the car and my car to the office at that time. I'd park, I don't know, it was probably a quarter mile maybe. So we're talking about how long did that even take me? Four or five minute walk. And I was just hurting a lot. And it felt like my knee joint was just completely mashed and just, it hurt a lot. And so I would go and see a doctor and I would get these anti-inflammatories and I would have to keep my leg propped up and all this kind of stuff. And I was an athlete. I was a competitive weightlifting athlete that did competitions on the regular, sometimes as many as 6 to 10 per year. And yet I would have these issues that would pop up and it didn't make a whole lot of sense. Fast forward in the post-Sarno era, I haven't had it one time. So take that how you will. But Halloween of 2015, or maybe it was a couple days before Halloween, 2015, had a shoulder subluxation, dislocation, and started to have some enormous shoulder pain after that. And this went on for 3 months until I could get a definitive, quotation fingers, definitive MRI, which happened in January of the following year. So I'm basically going in and out of pain in 2015, at the end of 2015. And then I get an MRI at the beginning of 2016. And to be honest, So it's interesting. So I went in, I got an MRI. I think it was probably a Wednesday or a Tuesday or something like that. They didn't give me the results right away. I had to come back the next day. And I remember recording a video the morning of the MRI and talking about how life was hurting so bad that I had to take painkillers a lot, which I was doing. Painkillers and anti-inflammatories and prescription strength and all that kind of stuff. And I was taking them very regularly and still doing my day job and working out to the best that I could at the time. I wasn't using my arms or anything like that. to do anything. So it was like, you know, we're talking about ab work and leg work as much as I could, but I couldn't like squat a barbell. So that still hurt too much to do it. So I went and got the MRI results, and the doctor explained what had gone on. She diagnosed me with a, what is it called? Why is the name escaping me? A Hagel lesion, H-A-G-L, Hagel lesion, humeral avulsion of the gleno something ligament, whatever. So she tells me this, tells me what the path to recovery is going to be like, which is extremely long, relatively speaking. It was going to be like a 9-month recovery, 9 months to a year. And I was pissed and I was very sad when she told me that. But she followed up the timeline by saying that I'm going to be okay. I'm going to return to my sport. And at this juncture, I was going to be holding off surgery for probably 2 to 3 months at the time. And she said, you can do anything up to tolerance. You're probably not going to hurt it anymore. So, you know, keep doing what you're going to do. And I drove from the hospital to the gym and did snatches, and I did clean and jerks, and I did split jerks, and I did squat or push jerks. All these movements I hadn't done in months, and I didn't have any pain. So to me, the way that I talked about it at the time with people that would inquire was that I couldn't hurt it anymore, so I might as well just do whatever I'm going to do. And I continued to train, build my way back up in a linear fashion over the next 2 or 3 months before the surgery, but I didn't have any pain. And it was kind of crazy. And thinking back now, that boost of confidence that Dr. Jurek gave me, just saying that, hey, you're going to get back to your sport and you're going to be able to do what you want to do, and just giving that overall confidence boost really took the edge off of everything. And in the best possible way. Still went forth, still had the surgery, went through, I was told when it came out, because it was a Bankart lesion or Bankart repair, which is the back, it's the underside and the back of your labrum. I had an articular cartilage microfracture done, and they did debridement of the supraspinatus. That was April 7th, 2016. And they had said that it would probably be somewhere between like 6 to 9 months to get back to full activity. And I rehabbed my ass off and worked my way towards getting full clearance for all activity by the beginning of September of that year. And the strangest thing happened that I started getting... So what I'm trying to lead to here is I wrote out every instance of pain, every doctor, every physical therapist, every thing that I did during this whole... several month journey. I would send this to the doctors that I was about to see after all my back and neck spasms started, which was a TMS thing, but I didn't know if it was a TMS thing. I thought that I ruined my shoulder repair, even though all of these continued issues were happening on the opposite side of where the surgery was. I just couldn't make any sense of it. So here's what I wrote. This was, by the way, I wrote this up shortly before I read Dr. Sarno's book. This is about a month before I read Dr. Sarno's book. September 6, 2016. Working out at the gym, I did 7 sets of 7 cable pull-ups during a CrossFit workout. These were heavily assisted and completed all reps with retracted scapulas to use as a bodybuilding exercise for my mid-back muscles, trying to target rhomboids and low traps. Immediately after this workout, something just felt off. I had pain in the anterior delt, bicep, ring finger, pinky, and I couldn't feel my rhomboids on either side. I called my surgeon's office immediately to go and see them ASAP, as I feared I had re-tore my labrum. I go back the next day. I got evaluated by the surgeon, Dr. Calfian's physician assistant. He said my labrums and my rotator cuffs tested well. And over the next couple of weeks, I start trying to work my way back up and trying to guess what's wrong, but it hurt from the moment I woke up until the moment I went to bed. I cannot explain to you how much pain I was in September of 2016. And I started mapping out a trip to where I was going to fly to Southern California to see this guy, Dr. Ben Rubin, who does reattachment surgeries to the muscles of the scapula, because that's what I thought happened. Again, the PA said, there's nothing here. There's nothing wrong. I went and did 4 sessions of ART, which is active release technique, with a chiropractor. He would do kinesio taping of my traps, ART of my upper traps and said that there's, he can't find anything wrong, basically can't figure it out. And I went to a sporting event down in Sacramento. It was a wrestling event, but I wrote it as a sporting event. And I just had intense burning pain throughout. And I went to see a weightlifting competition with somebody that I had met online who I met in a shoulder surgery group. And I went and saw her compete, and I just sat there wallowing in my own sadness because I couldn't do any of the stuff that I wanted to do. So I called the PT that I had worked with for my shoulder after my shoulder surgery. It says, I called upon my PT from shoulder surgery to help me figure this out. He was puzzled, but he did some manual therapy in my neck, traps, and upper back. By this time, I didn't have much pain in my arms, and mostly the pain was my upper back. By this time, most of the pain was on my right side, which again, I had surgery on my left side. He prescribed an at-home program of thoracic rotation to the right side, serratus anterior strengthening, along with diaphragmatic breathing exercises. He suspected it was thoracic outlet syndrome, which that became the predominant guess amongst a lot of the doctors that I saw. So I've got notations and write-ups here for things that happened pain-wise. They could have been spasms. They could have been sudden sharp spasms, just like 10 out of 10 of pain. October 19th, 2016, October 20th, October 30th, November of 2016, I saw Dr. Frankie at the Seattle Sports and Spine. And one of the things that he said was, I tend to find with these things that if you stop thinking about the pain will go away. And I was so mad when he told me that. And I look back years later, and I should call that guy, and I should ask him about that statement, because just to see where it was that he had learned it. Because that's, in a lot of ways, that's kind of in this, it's sort of in the Dr. Sarno cinematic universe, if you will, that. A week later, November 7, 2016, I go and I see Dr. Ross at the Soto Health and Performance Center. His hypothesis was that the muscles on the front of my body were pulling my back completely out of alignment, and he would focus active release technique on my pecs, my hip flexors. He also used kinesio tape and prescribed strengthening of the mid-back muscles during a six-week program to get them all pulled back, and he also did chiropractic adjustments to my neck. End of December of 2016, I discontinued treatment with that doctor after 6 weeks because I didn't have any improvement. I started seeing another doctor in Seattle, Sports Medicine Northwest. He did Graston technique on my upper back. He recommended that I come in three to four times per week for several weeks. I wasn't into that. Early January of 2017, started seeing a new PT in West Seattle. worked with him for several weeks. Didn't find it. I'm laughing because this is stupid now that I listen to all this. Early January 2017, I go and I see another guy at Kinetic Sports Rehab. I went there 4 times per week for 4 weeks. I did 16 sessions with them. I did one chiropractor, one physical therapy, 4 times a week for 4 weeks. Nothing changed. Not a thing changed. I then went and saw the Movement Fix. I did Nerve Glide. I was recommended to do Nerve Glide exercises for 2 weeks. Nothing changed. So I went back to see the guy who did the shoulder surgery. He said that my pain and dysfunction is coming from my neck. He said it wasn't necessarily a disc issue, but a facet issue was possible, and he sent me to see Dr. Weinstein at the University of Washington. I then went and saw a cranial sacral therapy and fascial strain counter strain specialist who charged me $250 per session, said that he could get this all cleaned up in one session. I went and did one session. Nothing changed. Then he said, oh, maybe two, maybe three. Didn't want to keep going to that. I go back and see another physical therapist. I work with him for several times. Nothing happens. I see a medical doctor at UW. He suspects that it's due to a very tight pec minor and referred me to somebody to do more ART. He said that I couldn't have thoracic outlet syndrome because I didn't have a cervical rib, which I think he's probably right. February of 2017, I start seeing two different specialists at Head to Toe Sports Therapy in Edmonds. They recommend a multiple, 2 times per week for several weeks to come in for adjustments. Nothing worked. Nothing happened there. I then started seeing a Rolfer, $150 per session. I went for 8 sessions. She focused on my hips, my neck, my delts, my chest. Nothing ever really made much of a difference. I might leave feeling 5% better within an hour. I'd feel just as worse as I did before. Sometimes even worse than I did an hour before. I then went and saw Dr. Winston Warm in UW, scheduled an appointment with him. I saw an acupuncturist, so I did 2 times per week for 6 weeks and noticed no difference. Then we get to March of 2017. I go and see my general practitioner. I explained to him that I thought that I had thoracic outlet syndrome, or that's what I was told. He did some clinical tests, didn't think it was that, but he didn't mention going to see a physiatrist at the University of Washington. So I see a couple more medical doctors in this time. And then I go see this chiropractor and I work with him for 6 weeks. I come in 2 times per week for the first, or sorry, I went in 2 times per week for 7 weeks, and I get to the end of that 7 weeks and I saw no improvement. He's having me do exercises. Literally, we're talking 10 to 20 times per day. Pretty much every waking hour is when I was supposed to be doing exercises, which I was doing. And a lot of them, they were all around core strengthening. Some of them I was doing in the on the bathroom floor in my work bathroom, because there was just no other place to do them. And so that's where I was doing them. And I come in at the end of 7 weeks and say, hey, you know, I'm not noticing any difference. There's no change here. And he told me that I just wasn't doing the exercises and that I probably wasn't doing them right, or I wasn't doing them at all. And I was pissed and I stopped going again. Then I had an EMG done. A couple of things came up positive on the EMG that didn't necessarily align with the experience that I had. Then I travel all the way to Montana and I go see a doctor at Helena Sports Medicine who I'd read about online. I paid $3,000 or $4,000 out of pocket to have a, what was it called? Hydrodissection of multiple nerve entrapments done. Felt so much worse driving home. I will tell you, a 14-hour drive home or whatever it was, after an experience like that, feeling worse is about as shitty as it gets. I then went and saw Seattle Sports and Spine. They diagnosed me with thoracic outlet syndrome again, despite all these doctors saying that wasn't the case. There were still several that were saying it was the case. Started doing PT again. None of that stuff was working. I then went and saw I'm writing up all this stuff and I'm sending it to all the doctors I'm about to go see. I got to look crazy by this point. And I'm not one of those people where I'm trying to rely on them to be a pharmacy, because I'm not going in and asking for drugs. I never once asked for a prescription and oftentimes didn't get them. The only time when I got the prescriptions were in between the shoulder injury and the surgery, and then in the couple weeks after the surgery. So it's frustrating to read because there was just so much time dedicated towards all this stuff. But I went and I saw this doctor, and I've talked about her a lot, Dr. Kimberly Harmon at the University of Washington. She went through and looked at all of the imaging that I brought to her and this whole dissertation that I wrote. She said she didn't care about any of these images because those don't tell the story all the time. Started asking me about the stress in my life. What do I do for work? Do I have any kids? And at that point, Audrey was on the way as the second kid. Zoe was 3 at this time. And I was in a high-stress sales job and really beating myself up over my performance in the previous few months. Going back to... So I had this amazing career year in 2015. And then in 2016, I struggled a lot. Still made all my goals, just by the skin of my teeth, still made all my goals. 2017 was a bad sales year. That was the worst sales year I've ever had. 2017 and 2018. Those were the bad sales years. But in 2017, I see this doctor, Dr. Kimberly Harmon. She says, hey, this is stress-related. She writes me a prescription to go see a sports psychologist instead of a typical pill or PT or whatever. Didn't end up booking with the sports psychologist. Somehow, some way, I come across Sarno's book as a recommended purchase on Amazon a couple weeks later. And I read that book in 2.5 nights at the end of June in 2017. And it spoke to me in such a way, I can't stress to you how much it was needed at that time. Because the amount of pressure and stress that I was going through, the amount of pressure that I was putting on myself to perform in so many different ways, thinking that not making my quota was the end of the world, was literally not killing me, but making me feel like, God, death would be better. I never had thoughts of suicide, anything like that. That wasn't part of the equation. But I was in such a dramatic amount of pain when I went to bed and when I woke up that sounded like such a better alternative because it was so bad. So I read Sarno's book, and it's talking about the year, what do they call it? The years of responsibility between the ages of 30 and 60. And man, do I feel it right now. I'm going to be 37 in March. Feel an enormous amount of stress and tension. You know, career is in a good place. I've had the best year of my career this year, 2023. But in the past, if something like that happened, again, 2015 was my prior best year of my career. So it took 8 years to get back to where I was. And in 2015, the thought as we closed that year and went into 2016 was that there is no alternative. I must do as well as I did this year or better, and that is it. And this is going to drive sales leaders in my world nuts. But the fact is, you look at athletes across the board, people have down years. People have years where they don't perform as well. There has to be somebody at the top, but there's a role for everybody. So if I don't perform as well, or if I perform half as well, or whatever, what does that mean about me as a person? What does that mean about me and my future? It doesn't mean anything. It means that it just happened. And that everything is going to be all right. And that's probably the biggest lesson over doing this show for 300 episodes in 6 years, over 6 years at this point, is that, in the words of Bob Marley, every little thing is going to be all right. Because it's the truth. So being able to have indifference towards a lot of this stuff has really been the biggest part of the equation for me. Is just recognizing that whatever is true today is not necessarily going to be true tomorrow. And also that you can have two beliefs about things that are in conflict. They can also both be true. So really just sort of almost questioning my entire existence has been a lot of what this show has been about. And the interviewing of people over time. And I'd say that one theme that I continue, when I try and do this show in such a way where people are interviewed that are recovered TMSers, if you will, people that have gone through a litany of pain problems and they don't have those chronic issues anymore. And then you have the physical therapists, chiropractors, doctors, therapists that all fit into a different bucket. And the thing, mostly from the recovery story people, but this happens a lot with the medical doctor people too, is that they kind of arrive at this place in their life where there's like two divergent paths. Either I'm going to continue to be hard-nosed and just believe that whatever I've always believed is what I will always believe about everything, not just about this kind of stuff, but about literally everything in life, relationships and circumstances and outcomes and consequences and all that stuff. Or I can take this other path that says, maybe I wasn't right about everything. And it's true. This is actually making me think of a video or a quote. I'm going to see if I can find it. Oops. Okay, got to go to this message here. Let's see here. Not that. Okay. So there was a movie a few years ago called All the Rage, done by Michael Galinsky about the life of John Sarno. And I would highly recommend you go check that out. You can find it in multiple places online. Let me actually just tell you where you can find it now. Get it on Google Play, get it on Apple TV, get it on Prime Video. So there's a lot of places that you can get it now. Michael Galinsky wrote that film, and he had this guy, this poet named Prince A on, and he had this amazing quote. I'm going to see if I can find the clip. Gosh, this has really put me on the spot. Okay, it's here. 3 minutes and 24 seconds. Let's listen.
I was driving to meet Prince E, who did this amazing video about stress in 60 seconds. And on the way there, I saw the sign that said pain body. So I figured, let's grab Prince and bring him here. So tell me what you know about stress.
Stress, right? There are no stressful situations. You know, we become stressed because of how we interpret a situation, how we relate to a situation. It's too many items on the shelf. And when you have too many items on the shelf, eventually it falls in. That's a mental breakdown, right? So we gotta take things off the shelf. We gotta learn how to let go of things, you know? I mean, we create the world that we see. You know, we co-create it, right? It's a psychophysical world that we live in. You know, everything is our interpretation. So it would make sense to not try to change the world, but try to change ourselves in order to deal with the world.
Yeah. A lot of this has come to you in the last couple of months, right? I know you are well known for your music and stuff, but 50 million views of things that you said.
Yeah, it's recent, and it came, I think, from my spiritual insights, you know? I mean, I just, you know, being a rapper for 7 years, it didn't really make me happy. You know, I say there's a difference between satisfaction and fulfillment. You know, I wanted to find something that was fulfilling. And I stopped comparing and competing, and I just decided to be. You know, I mean, and that's what life isn't meant to be suffered through or to be resisted against, to try to become something. It's, you're already where where you need to be. You know, you just have to, they say enlightenment isn't in the attaining of truths, it's the removing of lies. So when we remove all of these things that we've been told, all of our conditioning, we come to that happy place of emptiness, you know, and we can truly live our lives instead of letting life live us. You know, we're about 10 minutes from Ferguson right now. You know, we have so much devastation going on, so much conflict. When a being identifies with their spiritual being, I mean, racism falls away, corporatism falls away, exploitation falls away, all these things just die. Because how can you exploit another, how can you even do harm to another being, you know, if you understand who you truly are? You know, Jesus in the Bible, you know, and I'm not even religious, you know, I'm not a Christian, but I know, you know, Jesus had some interesting words to say. He said, forgive them, they know not what they do. And a lot of people, they know not what they do because they know not who they are, you know. But I do know that when you find out who you are, what you are, things just happen and things just unfold for you, which is why I think I've attained a lot of success. But not only success, you know, through the numbers, you know, 50 million views, but just to be at peace, you know, is I think the most beautiful form of success. That's it.
Yeah.
So how that relates to me is that at the very end, when he's talking about being at peace, is the definition of success to him. I am in sales, and for whatever reason, there's a part of my personality that has been very competitive for a very long time, and this is a very competitive career. And prior to reading Sarno's book and kind of going through this last six, seven years of trials and tribulations and truly being able to be at peace with sort of the most dominant part of my personality as it pertains to my career, which is the competitiveness, and be at peace that, hey, outcome independence, which I talk about a lot on this show, outcome independence of, hey, whatever happens, happens, and the outcome is going to be okay. Like, that is the power. That is the peace. And there's still times that I'll get, you know, riled up or fired up or whatever about things in my life. And those are things that I continue to work on and refine, whether it's getting quickly upset about situations or my kids or whatever. But recognizing that, like, hey, everybody has flaws and faults, and we all have instances of introspection. And I mentioned recently that the way that I get really tipped off, for instance, that, hey, there needs to be some slowing down and some really like evaluation and what's going on in your life currently, is any time that I have two real like divergent debates over something. And I've talked about how that could be a motorcycle, or it could be a cell phone, or it could be a TV service, or like whatever. Any time that you're sitting there having this internal debate and can't, the analysis paralysis thing, that tells me that, hey, there is inner work that needs to happen. And so that's the best piece of advice that I could give anybody, is being able to have outcome independence about whatever's going on in your life, meaning you have a situation where it could go great or it could go bad, and just recognizing that, hey, even if it goes bad, it'll be okay. There's very few situations in this world where you have a positive outcome and a negative outcome, and that negative outcome is the absolute end of the world. Very few. It might seem like it in at the moment, and I've had moments like that, and we all have moments like that. But 90% of the time, 95% of the time, if you're in a place with your health and where you are in the world where you can listen to this show, means that you're probably in a good spot. So that's what I got. 300 episodes. Thank you for being here. I'll see you at 301 next week.